Good morning, everyone. Today's daf is Baba Kama Daf Ayin Zayin. We are going to start on the bottom of Daf Ayin Vav Amibiz Bechola Ome Liftos Kipar Vidami. Just to jog our memory, the Gemara had a bunch of different discussions for how, according to Rabbi Shimon, you could be Chayav for Tvicha in a case of Kadshim. If presumably, according to Rabbi Shimon, Shchita Sheinu Ruya Lo Shma Shchita, you're going to be hard-pressed to find a Shchita that would come about as a result of a case of Tvicha that's going to be a Shchita HaRuya by Kadshim. So there are different suggestions that were made. Rav Dimi, in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, said, we're dealing with a case where you're shochet tmimim mibifnim, you're shechting a korban which does not have a mum in the proper place where it should be shechted in the Beis HaMikdash, and you're doing it l'shem bailim. That's how it would be a proper shechita. The question is, if that's really what happens, presumably this is a kosher korban, and how did you remove it from the possession of the person you stole it from? So the Gemara answers that according to Rav Dimi and Rabbi Yochanan, you have to assume that the blood of the korban was spilled. Ravin, in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, said, really, you shechted the korban almost entirely properly, but you didn't have the proper kavana. You didn't shecht it l'shem bailim. You didn't shecht it for the owner of the korban. You shechted it for a different purpose, for a different person. And Reish Lakish had said that you're shechting a korban, which is a baal mum, which is not proper to be brought as a korban. You're shechting that outside of the Beis HaMikdash. And that's why it would not be a problem of shechita b'chutz. Because this animal is not fit to be a korban since it has a baal mum. Now the Gemara was exploring those various answers, and it said that according to Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish, you'd have to assume that two principles, that kol ha'omei liftos kiparu idami, which works for Reish Lakish, and kol ha'omei lizrok kizarek dami. So the Gemara had brought a proof for Rabbi Yochanan that kol ha'omei lizrok kizarek dami. Now the Gemara is going to bring a proof for Reish Lakish, that Chol HaOmed Liftos Kiparu Idami. So that's where we'll begin our discussion. And then on Amid Beis, the Gemara is just going to go back and discuss these various answers of Reish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan, why they said what they said, and how that helps us explain the Mishnah. From there, the Gemara is going to launch into a discussion of Kilayim, because the Gemara is going to mention in passing a case of Tvicha Mechira by Kilayim, and the question is, how could you ever have a case of Tvicha Mechira on an animal that's Kilayim? The Gemara will explain why that is. Agav, there's going to be a lot of Tosfos on Ayin Zayin Amud Aleph, a very short Amud, so we'll try to address that when we get there. But let's begin at Bechola Ome Liftos Kiparu Idami. So we said, according to Reish Lakish, who said that the case in which you're going to be Chayav for Shechting Kadshim, according to Rabbi Shimon, who holds Shechita Sheinu Yelosh Mashchita, is where you're Shechting an animal, which is a Baal Mum, and you're doing it Bechutz. And thus, it's not a problem of Shechutei Chutz, not a problem of shechting an animal outside the Beis HaMikdash, since this animal is not fit to be brought in the Beis HaMikdash as a korban, since it has a mum. So the Gemara had asked that according to Reish Lakish, shechita doesn't seem to be matir the animal. Shechita is not what would conclude the process of the korban for this animal. Really, you would need to do a pidyon, you would need to redeem this animal in order to be motzi it to chulin, since it has a mum. So the question is, how could you be obligated if you never did a redemption, you never did a pidyon on this animal? So the Gemara had said that it works on the basis of a principle of kol ha'omei liftos kiparu idami, that anything which stands to be redeemed, anything which is going to be redeemed in the future, or could be redeemed, is as if it's already been redeemed now, and now the Gemara wants to prove that principle. The kol ha'omei liftos kiparu idami. We have a proof that anything which is destined to be redeemed or could be redeemed is considered as if it's redeemed already. Tanya, Rabbi Shimon Omer, para mitame tumas ochlin, ho v'haitala shasa kosher. Rabbi Shimon says that the cow which is going to be used for the para aduma is considered capable of receiving tumas ochlin. It's susceptible to the tuma, the ritual impurity that foods can receive, since it had a shas hakosher. Rashi says, the havya lashas hakosher lechol misha nishkita, since it had a time after it was shechted, after it was slaughtered, that it was fit to be eaten. Yardala torah ofel, at that point it took on the status of food, and thus it could receive tumas ochlin, it could receive the ritual impurity of foods, since it had a shas hakosher, since it had a time at which it was fit to be food. Ve'amar Reish Lakish, Reish Lakish adds a statement here that's going to be very important for us. Omer haya Rabbi Shimon, para niftes agabe maharachasa. Reish Lakish says that according to Rabbi Shimon, a para, the cow which is used for the para aduma, could be redeemed agabe maharachasa, on top of the place where it would be burned, because you have to burn the para aduma in order to get its ashes. V'sarafis ha-para le'inav, the Torah tells us in Parshas Chukas that we have to burn the para aduma in order to get the ashes to put into the water. But Reish Lakish tells us in the name of Rabbi Shimon that the para aduma could be redeemed from its kedusha, as the para aduma even right before it's burned. So Alma kola ome liftos kiparu idami, we see from there that anything which is fit to be redeemed, or anything which could be redeemed, is as if it's redeemed now. The Reish Lakish in the name of Rabbi Shimon is telling us that since the animal could be redeemed in a place where it's supposed to be burned, you could redeem it right there. And Rabbi Shimon told us that an animal, the Para Aduma, is susceptible to the Tumah of Ochlin because it had a Shasa Kosher, because it was at one time fit to be used for food. So you see that we're treating it not like a Para Aduma, we're treating it like a regular animal, as if it was redeemed, even though it was never redeemed. So how could that be? That's because we know you have the ability to redeem it, and we're assuming that so long as you have the ability to redeem it, that's as if it's been redeemed itself. That's where we see the principle of kala ome liftos keparu idami, and that explains the position of Reish Lakish from before, that even though really it's not shechita which is materes, it's not the slaughtering which permits the animal, which makes the animal fit, but rather because it's an animal, according to Reish Lakish, that has a blemish, that has a mum, we would need a real pigeon, but we see clearly that we assume kala ome liftos keparu idami, that if it's fit to be redeemed, it's as if it's been redeemed, and thus it's not a problem that you didn't actually redeem it. Now, I want to just speak about this long Amud Aleph of Tosfosim and short Amud Aleph of Gemara. I know it was mentioned a little bit in the short Machshava, but obviously this is one of the shortest Amudim in Shas as far as actual Gemara. It's not the shortest Amud. I'm sure you guys saw just a few it's months a back. Nazir Lamed Gimel Lamed Beis. There's no Gemara on Lamed Gimel Lamed Beis. Right. On Lamed Gimel Lamed Beis. I also don't think it's the longest Tosfos. I think the longest Tosfos, what you were just mentioning, I think, is in Yuma, on Daf Lamed Dalet Amud Beis, onto Lamed Ham and Aleph. There's a long Tosfos there, which speaks about Devar Sheinu Miskaven. If you do something unintentionally on Shabbos or in other areas of Torah, and Psikresha Denechale, Psikresha Delo Nechale, when you do something that's sort of unintentional, it's a secondary result of the action that you did, but it's inevitable. It's always going to happen. So Tosfos speaks at length about that. But there's a long history about these Tosfosim here on Ayin Zayin Amud Aleph. It was mentioned again in the short Machshava. But the story goes, it's assumed that these Tosfosim were written by Balei Tosfos, who were captured in the Crusades, and they were basically arrested, held in a tunnel by Crusaders. The next morning, they were supposed to give testimony, they were supposed to basically convert out of the religion, or otherwise they would be put to death. I mean, while they were chained up in this dungeon, the story goes, so the Shor Machshava mentioned that this is brought down in the Minchas Elazar, in his Sefer Divrei Torah, he quotes it, that he heard this from the Talmidim, from the students of one of his grandfathers, or one of his ancestors, the Bnei Yisaschar. He doesn't mention this point, which this story, he doesn't mention the Minchas Elazar, but this is assumed that the Tosfosim, when they were locked up, the Balei Tosfos, when they were locked up in this dungeon, they didn't have access to any ink, but they wanted to continue writing Divrei HaTosfos. They wanted to continue writing words and comments on the Gemara. So what they did was they took a sharp knife and they cut into their flesh to remove some blood, and they collected the blood in a large bowl, and then they used that blood to write these Divrei Tosfos. So that's not recorded. There's definitely a Masorah, there's a Kabbalah that's true. Whether it's true or not, I'm not positive. Rav Ephraim Waxman from Muncie, he has a song that essentially goes through various stories throughout history. He speaks about the Gemara of Hillel HaZaken, who was on top of the skylight, and he ended up being frozen by a bunch of snow because he wanted to hear, as the Gemara tells us, Yuma Lamed Hayam Abayez, Kadesha Yishma Divrei Elokim Chayim Mipishmai Avtalion. He wanted to hear the shir from Shmai and Avtalion, and they wouldn't let him into the base measures. He couldn't pay his way, so he climbed up on top of the skylight. So one of the stories that Rav Ephraim Waxman mentions in this song, Ahava Rabba, is this story of the Balei Tosfos, and he records that this is actually what happened. In Lakewood, the Beis Medrash Gavoa, BMG, in Lakewood, they put out a video, you can find it on YouTube, for one of their dinners, I think, in 2008, where they recorded the song, essentially, and they depict many of the stories that are recorded there with images. They show actual, I mean, I assume it's actors, acting out this scene where the Balei Tosfos are held by the Crusaders, and they actually show them, they don't show them cutting, that would be a little bit too graphic, but they show them writing these Tosfosim like with blood. That's the way the story goes, but that's when these Tosfos were written, and the next day, the Balei Tosfos were taken to be executed when they ultimately did not convert out of the religion. Another story that I heard related to this, maybe this is where this whole story comes from, somebody brought down or suggested that a Rebbe was once teaching his Talmidim, and they were struggling to pay attention, they were struggling to stay awake. And so he started telling them, this is so sad, if you think about when these Balei Tosfos were written, and he starts telling them this whole story, but they heard this whole story in a state, as the Gemara tells us, of nim velo nim, tir velo tir. They were still, you know, nodding their heads, they were in and out, they were partially asleep, so maybe parts of the story were misreported, maybe the entire story wasn't properly captured, Perhaps that's how this story developed, but that's certainly a story that's assumed. Another thing that's important to point out is part of this history is presumed based on the length of these Tosfosim. That you look at this Amud, you see it's a very short Amud of Gemara, there's all this Tosfos, so it must be that there's something going on here. But what we have to clarify what we mean by that. We don't mean that the Balei HaTosfos wrote their Tosfos in such a way, because the Balei HaTosfos didn't have Artsur Sadaf. They didn't have the Gemara laid out the way that we have. That's a much later thing, I think in the 15th century, when the Bamberg edition, if I'm pronouncing that correctly or if I'm not mistaken, was put out. These Tosfos were arranged in such a way, but it's assumed that the people who arranged the Tzur Sadaf knew that there was this rich history behind these Tosfos, and that's why they arranged this Daf in this particular way. They didn't stretch the Tosfos across multiple Daf and multiple Amudim, but they knew that there was a rich history, so they wanted to put a very short Amud of Gemara and long Tosfosim, so you'd look at it, and you'd see, oh, there's something going on here, and maybe you'd find out about this story. Another story I came across in researching this was supposedly, they say that, again, whatever this means, but they say that Esav one time found Yaakov, and he had prepared this large Sudas Yontif, this elaborate Suda. And so Esav says to him, what are you doing? I thought I get all the brachas in Olam Hazeh, and you get all the brachas in Olam Haba, so what are you doing making this elaborate Suda? And Yaakov says, this is not really a Suda, this is a Siyam Masechta. I finished Masechta Baba Kama, and I'm making a celebration for finishing the Masechta. So it said that Esav became very jealous, and he also wanted to finish Masechta. He wanted to finish Masechta Baba Kama. So he started learning Baba Kama, and when he got to this long daf of Tosfosim and Ayin Zayin Amud Aleph, he gave up. He was Miyayish. He lost hope of learning all these long Balei Tosfos, so then he stopped. I don't know if there's any merit to that story, but I came across it and I thought it was interesting. I'll just mention one last point on these Tosfosim, which is it's important to just remember the historical context of what's going on in the times of the Tosfos. You could read through many of the Tosfosim and Shas, and you wouldn't know necessarily that anything was going on. But Rav Ephraim Kandervogel pointed out that the way he sees it, the primary period of the Balei HaTosfos really begins with the birth of Rabbeinu Tam around the year 1100 and really ends with the death of Rabbeinu Peretz in the Maharam Nirenberg around 1290. So again, there are other Balei HaTosfos maybe a little bit before Rabbeinu Tam, maybe a little bit after, but that's the primary way that he sees the period. He's obviously one of the great historians, teaches in Yeshiva University. So if you think about those years from 1100 to the end of the 13th century in 1290 or so, that's roughly right around the time of the Crusades. And the Tosfos were struggling through many massacres, many pogroms. There are various instances that were recorded throughout history in people's Sfarim and otherwise, that terrible things that took place at this time. And when you understand what was going on in the historical context, you begin to understand some of the comments that the Tosfos make in various places. So just one short example, the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, Daf Yirches Man Aleph, tells the story of Rabbi Chanina ben Trajion being killed. And the Gemara records there that his Talmidim asked him, Rebbe, what are you seeing? He was wrapped up in a Sefer Torah and he was burnt alive that way. And he said that, I see, right, Otios Pochas Ba'aver, Gilonis Nisrafin. He said, I see that the scrolls, the parchment of the Torah is being burned, but the letters are going up to Shemayim, they're not being burned. And so they say to him, Rebbe, why don't you open your mouth and let the fire come directly into your mouth? You'll die a much quicker and much less painful death. And he said, I'd rather have this happen, you know, passively. I'd rather happen this happen naturally and not have me injure myself in any way. I'd rather not interfere. So Tosfos on the spot says, this is only for Rabbi Chanina ben Trajion. This is only for someone of the great stature of Rabbi Chanina ben Trajion. But for anybody else, if they see that someone from another religion is going to force them out of Judaism into their own religion on the, you know, on the basis of Yisurin, on the basis of suffering or punishment, then mitzvah lechabel ba'atzma. You should not follow what Rabbi Chanina ben Trajion did. You should not prevent, you know, hold back from injuring yourself, but actually you have a mitzvah to injure yourself. The Ritva makes a comment there and says, you know, I saw this quoted in the Gilyone HaTosfos, in the comments on the margin of the Tosfos. Again, he didn't have it laid out the way that we have it, but he saw the words of the Tosfos. First of all, the Ritva has a girsa there, not that it's a mitzvah lechabel ba'atzma, not that you're commanded, but mutter, exactly, that you're permitted to injure yourself. And he says this is a great chiddush. It's very hard to understand how Tosfos could have said such a thing, but he says, kfar horazak, and Tosfos already wrote this, and if that's what they wrote, then who am I to argue? Probably you have the obligation, or at least the permission, depending on the girsa, to listen to the Divrei HaTosfos. So you may see that Balei HaTosfos, you may see that comment of the Tosfos and say, what is Tosfos talking about? He's learning from this Maisa of Rabbi Chanina ben Trajion, some random halacha that if people are trying to force you out of the religion, then you have an obligation or maybe permission to injure yourself. Like, what does that have to do with anything? But if you understand, is that really practical? Is that really a halacha? But if you understand it in the historical context of what was going on, that this is something that unfortunately the Balei HaTosfos were suffering through on a constant basis, then maybe we can get some insight into why Tosfos would make that comment and various other comments that Tosfos makes throughout Shas. So that's just a little bit about these famous stuff.
But people who threw themselves from a roof rather than be captured by Romans, there wasn't, I don't know what the heter would have been there, but the Gemara gives you the story without any moral commentary about whether this was proper or not.
Right.
They threw themselves through the roof, al-kiddush Hashem, so they even, it even have a gloss of permissibility to actually kill yourself.
No, for sure, and some of these Gemaras contribute to that comment. Tosfos, I think, quotes another Gemara. I'm not sure if it's the Gemara you're referring to or not, but as a support for this claim or chiddush of Tosfos, he quotes a Gemara in Gittin on Daphne and Zion and Beis, which is talking about the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash. And he quotes there that there were several people who jumped into the sea, essentially, and killed themselves to avoid being killed by others. So certainly Gemaras that support that. But why is Tosfos jumping in and saying, oh, you're allowed to do this? LMI, it must be because of the historical context. This was something that was occurring on a not-so-infrequent basis. I mean, that's why Tosfos jumped in. So that's just a little bit of insight to these long Tosfosim on Ayin Zayin and Aleph. Again, more in the short Machshava, but just something to consider. So let's pick back up now in the Gemara on Daf Ayin Zayin Amid Beis. So again, we mentioned these various answers of Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish. Two answers within Rabbi Yochanan, Rav Dimi and Ravin. Rav Dimi, that you're shechting animals which do not have a mum inside the Beis HaMikdash for the Bailim. And the reason it's considered that you didn't bring a proper korban for the Bailim, you didn't bring a proper korban for the owner, is because the blood became spilled. Ravin said that you're shechting animals which do not have a blemish, but you're not shechting them for the sake of the Bailim, you're not shechting them for the sake of the owner. And Reish Lakish said that you're shechting animals which have a blemish, but you're doing it outside the Beis HaMikdash. So the Gemara wants to analyze why Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish gave the answers that they gave, and they didn't give the answers that the other gave. So says the Gemara, Bishlama Rabbi Yochanan lo amar kar Rishim ben Lakish, v'kabay la'ok me le'masnisin afilu b'tmimin. It makes sense why Rabbi Yochanan didn't give the answer of Reish Lakish, that you're shechting animals which have a blemish outside of the Beis HaMikdash, regardless of which of the two answers of Rabbi Yochanan you assume that he gave. Either way, Rabbi Yochanan gave an answer about animals which do not have a mum. So it makes sense that he didn't give the answer of Reish Lakish, where the animals have a mum, because he wants to teach the Mishnah specifically about a case where the animals do not have a mum. That seems to make more sense. And also, as Rashi points out, afilu b'tmimim, v'kol shekein v'balei mumim b'chutz t'shinu yedechikahu. He'd rather teach the Mishnah about a case where you're shechting an animal which does not have a blemish, and he has to make a certain assumption about what that case would be in order to explain why you'd be chaya for tvicha, but you could learn mikol shekein, you could learn based on an inference, that all the more so the same din would be true if you're dealing with an animal which has a blemish and you're shechting it outside the Beis HaMikdash, because that is essentially not a korban since it has a blemish. But Rabbi Yochanan thought it would be more literal to teach a case about hektish as being an animal which does not have a mum. So we can understand why Rabbi Yochanan didn't give the answer that Reish Lakish gave. Ela Reish Lakish, my time alo amar Rabbi Yochanan. Reish Lakish, why didn't he, Reish Lakish, who said that you're shechting an animal which has a blemish outside the Beis HaMikdash, why didn't he give the answer of Rabbi Yochanan, either of the two answers, that you're shechting an animal which does not have a mum inside the Beis HaMikdash and the blood was spilled, or you're shechting an animal which does not have a mum inside the Beis HaMikdash but not for the sake of the owner? So Reish Lakish would tell you, Amr lecha utvacho umechara, or omechara as they chant to Girsa. Kolhecha de ise bemechira ise betvicha. Reish Lakish says, the reason that I assumed the case is a case of an animal which has a blemish is because the pasuk tells us utvacho o mechara, that there are two ways in which you could be become obligated in payment of four or five times. That's through, as we've been discussing for a long time already, through tvicha, through slaughtering, or through selling the animal. And we assume that these two things are linked. That any situation, kolhecha de ise b'mechira, ise b'tficha, any situation in which you could be obligated for selling, we assume you could also be obligated for shechting the animal. But anywhere where you could not be obligated for selling the animal, we assume you would also not be obligated for slaughtering the animal. V'hani kachim, ho'o dechimaz bin kachim, lo havya mechira, les nehu b'tficha. And says Reish Lakish, if you establish the case as a case of Kadshim, as a case of Hekdesh, which does not have a mum, like Rabbi Yochanan does, you wouldn't have a case of Mechira. Why not? Says Rashi, Lo havya Mechira, de'ein Kadshim t'mimim yotzim l'chulhin. Because animals which are Kodesh, which are Korbanos, which are fit to be Korbanos, which do not have a blemish, cannot be Yotzei L'chulin. You can't just remove the Kedusha of an animal which is pure. And therefore, you couldn't have a case of Mechira by an animal which is Kodesh, by an animal which is Hekdesh, that does not have a Mum. Therefore, Hilkach b'balei mumin askinan de'inu b'tarayu. And says Reish Lakish, since we need these two things to go together, hand in hand, that either you have both Tvicha and Mechira, or you have neither Tvicha and Mechira, I couldn't have established the case as a case of shechting an animal which does not have a mum. If I had done that, since an animal which does not have a mum cannot go out to Chulin, you wouldn't have a case of Mechira. Memela, you would also not have a case of Tvicha. And that's why Reish Lakish specifically assumed the case was dealing with a case where you shecht an animal which has a mum outside the Beis HaMikdash, because that's the only way you're going to find both Tvicha and Mechira. Now, what would Rabbi Yochanan respond to that point? Presumably, Rabbi Yochanan would say that you don't need to have both Tvicha and Mechira hand in hand together. You could have one without the other. And the Gemara says, if that's true, that Reish Lakish assumes Tvicha and Mechira have to go together, and Rabbi Yochanan, who didn't hold of this question of Reish Lakish, assumes you don't have to have both of them together, that's ve'azdu letamayhu. They go lishitaso, they're consistent in their opinion regarding that matter. De'itmar hamocher treifa ledivrei Rabbi Shimon, because we have a statement, which is going to be a machlokas, Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish, that if a person sells an animal which is a treifa, according to Rabbi Shimon, so we know that Rabbi Shimon would say, if you shecht an animal which is a treifa, you're not going to be obligated to pay four times or five times, because that's a shechita she'ein ru'uya. It's a shechita which is not fit to be eaten, a shechita where you cannot eat the animal, and that, according to Rabbi Shimon, is lo shema shechita. So what would you say if a person sells such an animal which is not subject to tvicha, should they be obligated for mechira? So Rabbi Yochanan amar chayev, Rabbi Yochanan says, yes, you should still be obligated for mechira, you should still be obligated for selling, because they're not linked, as we just said. Reish Lakish amar pater, and Reish Lakish would say, you're pater. No, even though really you should be obligated for selling an animal which is a treifa, because it has nothing to do with shechita, since you can't have shechita by a treifa, you also cannot have mechira, because heyach ani korekan tvich utvacho o mecharo. How could I consider that a case of tvicha mechira? Nigmar explains, Rabbi Yochanan amar chayav, af agav delesei betvicha, isei b'mechira. Rabbi Yochanan says you're obligated for selling a treifa, even though you couldn't shech the treifa, you wouldn't be obligated for slaughtering a treifa, according to Rabbi Shimon, that shechita she'en ru'uya lo shma shechita, you still could be obligated for selling it. Reish Lakish amar pater, kevan delesei betvicha, leisei b'mechir. And Reish Lakish says you're pater for selling an animal which is a treifa, because just like you can't be obligated for shechting it, because shechita she'en ru'uya lo shma shechita, according to Rabbi Shimon, so too you can also not be chayav for selling the animal, right? As Rashi says, "Va'azdu l'tamayhu de'ifligu ba yiba'inan tarvayu ilo." Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish had already argued whether you need both Tvicha and Mechira to be obligated for one, or whether you don't need both, you could be obligated for one, even if you would never be obligated about the other. And that whole machlokes was within Rabbi Shimon, the divrei Rabbi Shimon, shepoter al tvichasa, according to Rabbi Shimon, who exempts you from slaughtering an animal which is a treifa, because that's a shechita she'en ru'uya, what would the din be? By selling a treifa, so as we just saw, that's going to be a machlokas, Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish. Now, Tosos over here makes an interesting point. If you look at Tosos, Dibra Machil, Kohecha de'ita b'mechira, ita b'tficha, we had said that according to Reish Lakish, you're only going to be obligated for selling an animal if you could be obligated for shechting it, but if you cannot be obligated for shechting it, you cannot be obligated for selling it either. So it says Tosfos, Umocher b'Shabbos dechayev. Well, how do we explain somebody who sells an animal on Shabbos? We had mentioned in the Mishnayos earlier that if you sell an animal that you stole on Shabbos, you would be chayev for mechira, even though if you shechted an animal on Shabbos, you would not be chayev for tvicha. So it says Tosfos, how do I address that case? That's afal gav dim tavach pater hahi behema isa b'tvicha b'chol. Even though if you shechted an animal on Shabbos, you would be pater, that doesn't violate this principle of needing the two to go hand in hand, according to Reish Lakish, because if you had shechted that animal during the week, when it was not Shabbos, you'd be chayav. And since you'd be chayav for shechting the animal during the week, it makes sense, it's logical, it's possible that
what is there selling an animal on Shabbos?
No, there's no iser, but you violate.
Chayav dal v'hei. I understand that. You're chayav dal v'hei.
Yeah. So Tosfos is saying, how could it be that you're chayiv da'al v'hei if you wouldn't be chayiv for shechting the animal? You wouldn't be chayiv da'al v'hei for shechting the animal on Shabbos. So Tosfos says the answer to that question is because you'd be chayiv for shechting that animal if it was during the week. Now, what you're alluding to before is we mentioned the reason you're obligated for da'al v'hei by selling an animal on Shabbos is because there's no iser da'raisa of selling. It's only an iser da'rabanan, mekach u'mimkar, lest you write, shema yechtov. But that's why you're potter if you shech the animal, because that's a real iser daraisa of shechita on Shabbos, and you'd be obligated to die. I think what Tosfos is saying here is another way of making a point that the Gemara had made earlier. The Gemara had said, what about a case where you'd be potter on Shabbos from doing tficha or mechira? And the Gemara said, that's not because you're exempt from tficha or mechira. The reason you're exempt there is not because you're not obligated. It's just that, kam le bidrab aminei. You should be obligated in shechting. You should also be obligated in losing your life because you violated Shabbos. And since we give you the more severe punishment, we don't give you the less severe punishment of payment.
Why does the Tosfos answer that you could
shechter
for
a refuah
on Shabbos?
You shechter for a refuah on Shabbos, but then to make it parallel, we'd have to assume that you also sold for a refuah on Shabbos. Right? So we're trying to make a direct link, a direct parallel between sale on Shabbos and slaughter on Shabbos. So in order to do that, we want to make as few kimtas as possible, as few assumptions about the case of Shabbos. So Tosfos of shechting on Shabbos. So Tosfos ends up saying that it's because you'd be obligated during the week if you shecht an animal. To me, that's a very similar way of saying the reason you're pater on Shabbos is really you are obligated on Shabbos. It's just that you have kam le bidrab aminei. So the same is true. You could even be obligated for mechira on Shabbos. So again, this is the machlokas Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish. Rabbi Yochanan says Tvicha Mechira do not have to go together. Reish Lakish says the two do have to go together. So based on that, Rabbi Yochanan has a kasha. Eitavei Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish. Rabbi Yochanan poses the following question to Reish Lakish. Ganav kilayim v'tavcha, or treifa umachra, mishalim tashlume arba v'chamisha. Says Rabbi Yochanan, I have a case which says, a braisa which says, that if you steal an animal which is kilayim, and you shecht it, or alternatively, you steal an animal which is a treifa, and you sell it, you'd be obligated to pay arba v'chamisha in both of these cases. So says Rabbi Yochanan, my love, Rabbi Shimon, aren't we assuming that this case is according to Rabbi Shimon, according to whom we had just argued whether Tvicha and Mechira have to go together? And this case seems to say clearly that if you sell a treifa, you'd be obligated to pay arba v'chamisha, even though Rabbi Shimon holds that if you shechted a treifa, you would not be obligated to pay arba v'chamisha because it's a shechita she'in ru'uya, which is lo shma shechita. So says the Gemara, Alma af agav de leisei betvicha, isei b'mechira. I see clearly that even though a treifa would not obligate you in arba v'chamisha if you shecht it, it would obligate you if you sell the animal. And that seems to be a direct kasha on Reish Lakish. Why did Reish Lakish say the two have to go together if this braisa seemingly indicates clearly that they do not have to go together? So Amar Lei, lo Rabbanan. Reish Lakish responds to this question of Rabbi Yochanan and says, you totally misunderstood. You thought this braisa was going within Rabbi Shimon, and that's why it posed a problem, for my opinion, that the two have to go hand in hand together, according to Rabbi Shimon. But you misunderstood. It's really going like the position of the Rabbanan. And according to the Rabbanan, treifa would not violate that klal. Really, according to Reish Lakish, even the Rabbanan should agree that they have to go together. But according to the Rabbanan, if you shech the treifa, that should also obligate you in arba v'chamisha, because the Rabbanan holds shechita she'in re'uya shma shechita, that a shechita which is not fit for consumption is still considered a good shechita, and therefore it's considered utvacho, that you slaughtered the animal which you stole, and you would be obligated to pay arba v'chamisha. So ask the Gemara, yi Rabbanan treifa b'mechira isa b'zvicha lesa? So the Gemara asks exactly that question. According to, if it's the Rabbanan, if the author of this braisa is the Rabbanan, then is it true that a treifa could only be a case of mechira, could only be a case of a sale, but cannot exist in a case of zvicha, in a case of shechting? I think there's a girsa which changes the word zvicha, which is what I have in my Gemara, to tvicha, which makes more sense. It's more consistent with the Gemara, with the pasuk rather, that utvacha. But the Gemara is asking, if the author of this braisa is really the Rabbanan, why would we say that you're only obligated for selling a treifa? You should also be obligated for shechting a treifa. The LMI, so then Reish Lakish asks back, well, what are you trying to say? That really the author of this braisa is Rabbi Shimon? Then you could ask the same question about kilayim. Kilayim betficha isa b'mechira lesa? Could you only have a case of kilayim where you're shechting the animal, but not a case where you sell the animal? Kilayim should be subject to both cases, to shechting the animal, which is kilayim, and to selling the animal, which is kilayim. So why did the Gemara, why did the Braisa specifically say Gunav Kilayim Betavcha, that you stole Kilayim and shechted it? It could have also taught a case of selling Kilayim. Ella Tana Tficha Behu Adin Lemechira. So Reish Lakish says, in order to defend myself, what you'd have to explain for Rabbi Shimon is that we teach a case of Kilayim about slaughtering, Tana Tficha Behu Adin Lemechira. But it's presumed that the same is true about selling, that even if you sell an animal which is kilayim, you would also be obligated according to Rabbi Shimon. So, Eima l'Rabbanan Nami Tana Mechira Behu Adin L'Tvicha. And therefore, for the Rabbanan, I could say the same thing, that even though according to the Rabbanan, if this Braisa was really authored by the Rabbanan, the Braisa only taught a case of selling a treifa, when really it could have also taught a case of shechting a treifa. But okay, since you would have to say for Rabbi Shimon that by Kilayim we just mentioned a case of slaughtering, but it also includes sale, you could say the same thing for the Rabbanan, that by a treifa it only mentions sale, but really it would include shechita also, since the Rabbanan assume shechita shein ruya shma shechita. So Reish Lakish says, I can get out of this braisa. It's not a problem that we only taught one case of each, one case of Kilayim and one case of treifa, even if it's authored by the Rabbanan. The Rabbi Yochanan Amalecha, hi my. Rabbi Yochanan would respond to Reish Lakish and say, what are you talking about? That's a terrible answer. Iyamar Bishlama Rabbi Shimon, if you say the author of the Brice is Rabbi Shimon, then I did a tana trefa bechada, tana kilayim bechada. If the author of the Brice is Rabbi Shimon, I could explain why we only taught a case of shechting kilayim and not a case of a sale of kilayim. The reason for that is because we only taught one case by trefa. That according to Rabbi Shimon, you could only have a case of a treifa with a sale, but you cannot have a case of a treifa with shechting, because shechita she'en ruya lo shma shechita. And then for parallel structure, by kilayim, we also only taught one case, which would be a case of shechting. Ele'iyar mart rabbanan, but if you assume the author of the braisa is the rabbanan, na'arvinu vinininu, if the author of the braisa is the rabbanan, in which case both treifa and kilayim are subject to both cases, to mechira and to tvicha, to both sale and to shechita, we should have mixed all the cases and taught them together. Ganav kilayim v'treifa tavchanu mecharan meshalan tashlume arba v'chamisha. We should have taught that if you steal an animal which is kilayim or an animal which is a treifa, and you either shech the animal or you sell the animal, that you'd have to pay arba v'chamisha. So it doesn't make sense to say that the author of the Braisa is the Rabbanan. It must be that the author of the Braisa is Rabbi Shimon. Nonetheless, you see that you can be obligated for the sale of a treifa, even though you cannot be obligated for the shechita of a treifa. And that poses a kasha on Reish Lakish. How could Reish Lakish say that the two have to go hand in hand? They always have to be present together. Seemingly, Rabbi Yochanan is correct that they do not have to go hand in hand. And the Gemara says, kasha, yeah, that's actually a great question. According to Rabbi Shimon, it makes no sense that Reish Lakish would assume the two have to go hand in hand, that they have to go together. Seemingly, they could even stand on their own. Now, in the Braisa, we mention that you would be obligated for Arba v'chamisha if you shecht an animal which is kilayim. So the Gemara asks, how could it be that you're obligated for shechting an animal which is kilayim? Kilayim, seksiv. How could you be obligated tvicha mechira to pay four times or five times for shechting an animal which is kilayim if the pasuk says that Arba v'chamisha comes about in one case when you steal a seh, when you steal a sheep, right? Ki yignovi shor o seh. The Amar Rava, and Rava tells us in the Gemara in Chulin, we have a principle that zeh bona'av, this pasuk, it's a machlokas, exactly what pasuk that's talking about. Rashi says it's talking about the kosher animals that you can eat. Zeh be'ema asher tochelu, shor sek fasim v'seh izim. That some of the animals which are kosher, one of the animals that's mentioned is a set. Tosos disagrees with that and says it's talking about a different pasuk. I'm not seeing the pasuk sticking out right now, but I am shom. Tosos disagrees with Rashi on that point. But he says, Zeh bana'av kol makom shenem arseh eino ela lehotzies ha-kilayim. Rava says that the pasuk which mentions a set, whether that's the pasuk of the kosher animals or a different pasuk according to Tosos, that pasuk teaches us that any context in which the Torah uses the word set, that's to tell us that kilayim is not included. So our pasuk by Tvicha Mechira, which says ki gnovi shor oseh, seh should exclude kilayim. So why would the Braisa say that if you steal an animal which is kilayim and you shecht it, you'd be obligated to pay arba v'chamisha? Seemingly kilayim should not be subject to these dinim. According to the principle, the binyan av, the principle that applies to seemingly the entire Torah, according to Rava, that anywhere where it says seh, kilayim would be excluded. So answers the Gemara, shayni hacha de amar kra, o lerabos es ha-kilayim. The context of Tvicha u'mechira is different. That generally we would assume, if the Torah says the word seh, that excludes kilayim. But since in the context of Tvicha u'mechira, the Torah says o, which we assume could be used as a ribui, which we assume could be used to add something back into the psukim, in that context, sure, o seh, so that includes kilayim back into the dinim, and that's why you could be subject to arba v'chamisha if you steal and shecht an animal of kilayim. So ask the Gemara, v'chol o the rabos who? I'm sorry, so now I'm seeing in my Gemara, I'll just mention quickly, the pasuk that Tosos thinks is the binyanav is really a pasuk by the Korban Pesach, which I think is actually this week's parasha, daf yomi coincidence, mina kvasim u'mina izim tikachu, that we're told by the Korban Pesach that you have to take it mina kvasim u'mina izim, it has to come from various types of sheep, and that's why we have a binyanav, that's why we know in Kol HaTorah Kula that seh is the hotzias hakilayim. Fine. So ask the Gemara, v'chol o l'rabosu, is it true that anytime we have the word o, that comes to include certain things, and in this case we'd be using that to include kilayim? V'atanya shor o chesev, prat l'kilayim, o is prat l'ninma. We have a brisa which says, quoting the pasuk in Parshas Emor, the beginning of the Kriyas HaTorah for Pesach and for Sukkot, that the animals which are brought as a korban are a shor or a chesev, right, a bull or a sheep. Again, I'm not so good with the zoology, so if I mess up the exact translation of some of these animals, I apologize. But the pasuk tells us you have a shor, you have a sheep. So the fact that an animal could be one of these two is prat l'kilayim. That excludes kilayim from being a korban. And o is the continuation of that pasuk, or I think a goat, that excludes an animal which is a nidme. What's a nidme? Rashi says, de'eno dome la'aviv velo le'imo. It's an animal which appears to be in no way similar to its father nor to its mother. Sheba me'ayil v'rachel v'dome le'eis. That it comes from a ram and a rachel, which I think is a female, like I don't know if it's a lamb or a sheep, whatever it is. V'dome, a sheep? V'dome le'eis. But it looks like a goat, right? So it doesn't seem in any way similar to its parents. Such an animal would be assumed to have, you know, I don't know, some disformity. Maybe it wasn't actually impregnated by the parent that we think it was, and therefore it cannot be brought as a korban. But what we see clearly from this brisa is that O is not l'rabos, O is l'mayit, that we say shor o chesev is prat l'kilayim, that comes to exclude kilayim, and O is prat l'nidme, that comes to exclude an animal which is not similar to its parents. So how could we say that in the context of tficha u'mechira, the word O tells us that kilayim is included? It seems like O is generally amir, it comes to exclude. So Amarava, hacha me'inyane dekra, v'hacha me'inyane dekra. Really, I can't give you a general rule for how the word O is used. You have to look at the context in each of the psukim.
But hacha me'inyane dekra. Is this an instance of davar halamed me'inyano?
Davar halamed me'inyano.
Is this an instance of one of the 13?
Yeah, I'm not sure if this technically counts as a davar halamed me'inyano. It certainly seems like it, or at least the same principle. What Moshe is mentioning is that in the Brisa of Rabbi Shmuel, where he tells us the Yid Gimel Mido Shatorani dresses by, and the 13 principles, the hermeneutical principles through which we can understand the Torah, one of them is a Dover Halame Minyano, something which is learned based on the context. Here the Torah says, the Gemara is saying, we have to learn based on the context in both Pesukim, whether or not that qualifies as a concrete Dover Halame Minyano, I'm not sure, but certainly parallel, and certainly seems to fit that rule. But we can understand how to darshan the word O in the context of the korbanos and in the context of Tvicha Mechira, based on the specific context of the pesukim, we have to look carefully. Gabe gneva dichtiv shor oseh she'ei ata yachol lahotzi kilayim mibeinehem. In the context of Tvicha Mechira, the Torah tells us shor oseh, either a bull or a sheep, and those are animals where you cannot be motzi kilayim mibeinehem. You cannot produce an animal of kilayim from a shor and set. Why not? Ashor and Seh are two different animals. Seemingly, if you produced an animal from the two of them, that should be kilayim. So what Rashi explains is that, I believe, the gestation periods of the two animals are different. That Ashor is considered a behema gasa. It's like a much bigger animal. And they are pregnant for 9 months. And a Seh is a behema daka. It's like a smaller type of animal, which gives birth in 5 months. And since they don't have matching reproductive systems, they don't have matching capabilities, you would not be able to be mostly an animal that's kilayim from the two. If you had offspring of these two animals, obviously it would be kilayim, but it's presumed to be impossible since the animals have different types of gestation periods. So since the Torah tells us by tvicha u'mechira, shor oseh, two animals from which you cannot produce kilayim, kilayim would automatically be excluded, and therefore the word o comes the rabos kilayim. Since kilayim would automatically be excluded since it's impossible to create from these two animals, then the word o comes to include kilayim. But gabe kachim, dechtiv, kesev, ve'ez, sha'ata yachol, lahotzi, kilayim, yibinem, since in the context of the korbanos, the Torah says kesev, ve'ez, it mentions two animals, again, a sheep and a goat, both of which are behemos dakos, both of which are smaller types of animals which have the same type of gestation period, and you would be able to be motzi kilayim. You could successfully have offspring from these two animals, and that animal would be kilayim, it would be usur, because it's a mixing of species. But since kilayim would automatically be included, since it's possible to create o lemaidhu, then the word o comes to exclude kilayim. So it's not a problem that by tficha mechira we're saying o comes to include kilayim. That's just based on the context. Since by tvicha mechira kilayim would have been excluded, o comes to add them back. But by korbanos, where kesev and eiz would have automatically included kilayim, then the word o comes to exclude them. So then ask the Gemara, v'hal gabe kachim nami ne'mar shor o kesev, she'ein ata yachol lahotzi kilayim imbinayim v'nirbi. By kachim, we have a problem. The Gemara, if you look carefully, it didn't really make sense. The Gemara quoted a brisa which said, shor o chesev, that the two words, shor and kesev, a bull and a sheep, that comes to exclude kilayim in the context of korbanos. But then the Gemara said, since the pasuk by korbanos says kesev and eiz, a sheep and a goat, where you could be motzi kilayim from the two of them, then o comes to exclude. But if we just follow the beginning of the pasuk, if we just follow shor o kesev, where the Torah says that the type of animals which can be kachim are either a bull or a sheep, where you would not be able to be motzi kilayim from them, then kilayim should automatically be excluded because it would be impossible to produce kilayim from such an animal. V'nirbi, and we should include kilayim back based on the use of the word o. So how are we understanding the psukim in such a way? Seemingly that doesn't make any sense. So answers the Gemara, mi d'seifa lemai, reisha nami lemai. The Gemara says, yeah, that's really a good question. But since the pasuk continues on to tell us o eis, or a goat, and we use that to exclude a nidmeh, we use that to exclude an animal which is not similar in appearance to its two parents. So since the end of the pasuk comes to exclude a case, the beginning of the pasuk also comes to exclude a case. So even though, really, we could have understood the psukim in such a way that kilayim would have been excluded, and then O adds it back, we have precedent for parallel structure to use the psukim to exclude something, and that's why we're going to darshan it in a way in which kilayim will be excluded. So ask the Gemara, Adarabba, mi dereisha l'rabos, seifa nami l'rabos. You have two options. Either you could use the seifa to exclude something, and based on that, use the beginning of the pasuk to exclude something, or you could go the opposite way. You could say, really, I can understand the reisha to include something, and then why don't you understand the seifa to include something also? So if you backwards? Want to maintain parallel structure, and especially, why go backwards? It seems to be more logical to assume that the end would follow the beginning, not that the beginning would follow the end. And since both of these possibilities would maintain parallel structure in the psukim, and in how we're understanding the psukim, why would you darshan them in such a way? So answers the Gemara, Hi Mai, what are you talking about? That doesn't make any sense. If you understand that the word O in the pasuk is going to exclude something, and you need two miutim, because we know you have two times the word O, and you have two miutim, that would make sense that they would both come to exclude something. The afal gav, the imit kilayim, itzrich lemiutei nidma. That even though at the beginning of the pasuk excludes kilayim, I need another pasuk to tell me to exclude nidmeh, to exclude a case where the animal is not similar to its parents. Why? I see we're getting some faces. Because Rashi points out that nidmeh is more kal, that an animal which is not similar to its parents is less chomer than an animal which is kilayim. Why? Because an animal which is kilayim, we know to be kilayim. We know it to be a mixing of two species. But an animal which is just a nidmeh, which doesn't look like either of its parents, may not actually be problematic. I know the Torah excludes it, but at the end of the day, what are we saying? We're basically saying there's a possibility that it wasn't produced by its actual parent, but it's not as chomer as kilayim. It's not as bad as kilayim, which we know to be problematic. Which we know to have come from the mixing of two species, which is usur. So if you tell me that I have two miutim, I have two psukim to exclude something, I would first exclude kilayim, and then I need another pasuk to tell me that nidmeh is also excluded. Ela'i amar l'rabos trei ribuye lama. But if you tell me that the word o is coming to include something, why would I need two psukim to include something? Hashta kilayim irbile nidma mibaye. Once I know that kilayim is included, then all the more so nidma should be included, because as we just said, nidma is more kal, it's less severe, less stringent than kilayim. So if I know that kilayim is being included, I know by logical inference that nidma is also included. And that's why we darshan the psukim in such a way. We darshan them to exclude, and we understand that if kilayim is excluded, I wouldn't necessarily know that nidma is also excluded. So comes the pasuk to tell me a second O to exclude kilayim. If you had tried to understand it in a different way, that O is lerabos, you wouldn't need both ribuyim, you wouldn't need both inclusions, because once kilayim is included, I know by logical inference that nidma is also included. Okay, we'll hold it over here. Shkoyach, everybody.
Why isn't this